I just had this feeling that something was unusual. So we kind of filed that in the background, and I was also researching free energy, zero-point energy, and I had come across the site of a retired Colonel Thomas Bearden. And within his work, there were examples of clouds that had met electromagnetic waves of manipulation, and I was kind of curious that this was even a possibility. So I read a little bit more and got a little background. I thought, well, this is interesting, but I wasn't ready to fully understand what was going on yet. So two or three years later, after I'd got a digital camera and started doing the landscape photography that I enjoyed doing, I just started noticing that there was geometry in the skies, and that played in the composure of my photography. And so I ended up going back to Bearden's site and researching a little more on the Russian woodpecker grid, its capabilities, what they believed and wanted to do with it, and the aims. So then I came to the conclusion there must be some kind of weather modification process ongoing. But I was believing that it's going to be the big events, the big storms off the West Coast, or a little bit of La Nina or El Nino, or a hurricane or two. After that, it was June last year, June 2004, looking at a cold front on the high-resolution satellite imagery across Montana. And the clouds didn't look right. Over Billings, Montana, there was a square cloud about 10 miles by 10 miles. And I thought, well, that's unusual. And it was alone. Simply nothing else around it except for this square cloud. And it wasn't anything to do with orographics, so the influence of the mountains on the terrain. This was too perfect for that. And the squall line, had the thunderstorms aligned like sliced bread with perfect parallel lines running north and south through them. Towards the end of the front, there was a gap which was exactly the same size as the square cloud across Billings, and then the storm shifted 10 kilometers off to the south. But the orientation of the cut lines through the thunderstorms was now east-west, so perpendicular to the previous ones. And then as the squall line continued on, the thunderstorms realigned north-south. I just got a sinking feeling in my gut that we were now subject to weather that had been entirely subject to some form of manipulation. If I was to see these shapes in a nondescript, non-important storm in Montana, that something much, much bigger than I anticipated was sitting there in front of my face. No. And it was kind of disappointing because it had been there for so long and I hadn't noticed it.
Now, you have weather associates that you converse with, I'm certain. Do they have your same opinion?
There have been numerous emails about people who have been concerned that they've been in their inability to get a forecast just right when it seems so obvious and the storm's coming and it splits or falls apart. I mean, we're talking now casting, where the storm is there and it should at least maintain its identity for the next 10 miles, and they don't. So there's a lot of curious minds out there that something is afoot. The trouble has been that it is such a leap of faith, such a leap of scientific understanding. If this grid is truly in place, then it rewrites so many books.
Oh,
simply
boy.
Rewrites them.
Yes, now you have the same statement I have on my website regarding Secretary of Defense William Cohen in April 1997. Now that's very incriminating documentation right there, isn't it?
Well, it's an admission that something is up, you know, and it can be looked at as these are potentials that we're studying or that they are operational technologies and have been used in the past. Because he doesn't specifically say they've been used, he just says they're there. And we know, or at least I'm certainly of the opinion now, that they are being used and are being used all the time. I mean, you don't give Army guys incredible toys and not have them go play with them. That just doesn't happen. They don't sit on the back burner, and you don't explore their possibilities.
So
we've got a bunch of boys out there with howitzers when they're shooting at prairie dog holes. It's just overkill.
Now we have 1.3 million people being evacuated right now. They're running out of gasoline. They're stranded on the highways. If the fact of the matter is that these can be maneuvered and moved, hurricanes, that is, right now we're talking about hurricanes, wouldn't it be logical to move it away from the country?
Or at least take pot shots at it so it's weaker than a Category 5. You know, if you're going to try to keep it looking somewhat natural, I suppose you sped it up, make it this big, booming menace, everybody gets evacuated, then it limps on in. We've seen that happen before. And I was kind of disappointed that Katrina did not do that or display any of those countermeasures, if you will, before she made landfall. So it was almost as if it was deliberately spun up and kept intense all the way up until a landfall. Because with Ivan, we saw a definite weakening as that whole southern and southwestern eye wall collapsed a few hours before landfall. And at that point, we knew that it was going to be, yes, expensive along the core of the eye, but the big deal would be just the flooding thereafter. But Katrina came in with essentially her full force, and it'll be very telling as to who's doing this if Rita comes in at full force as well. So it's a game. The technology operates without fingerprints, and you're kind of left with after the post-mortem of the event, figuring out what the heck was going on. You know, it's a different warfare. It's a different kind of warfare that we've not faced in a long, long time.
Are you feeling that we're being attacked right now by a hurricane?
By somebody. Mm-hmm. By somebody. The question is who. You know, if the hurricane does not weaken, then you have to think that there was definitely some malice, some intent there. And I have been so busy, I have not done the surveillance with this storm as I have with some of the others. There's just been so many other demands on my time that I haven't been able to sit down and do the archiving as this whole thing envelops. But there's somebody down back there who can control it and guide it. So whether it's three entities all working together on keeping Rita, and then one is shooting against it or trying to work it down, or a combination of the above, I don't know. I don't know that we'll ever know until we're able to tape up DC and go in and empty out the document or the secret files.
So, wouldn't that be remarkable?
Yeah, we need a police line around the whole district and just go in and see what the heck they've been doing behind our backs.
This situation that we're living right now is very obvious to me. I've been studying weather modification for years to a certain extent, not to the extent that those that have the associations and knowledge from other directions, like Thomas Bearden.
Mm-hmm.
But you've been a weatherman for how long?
20 years.
20 years in the business, and here we're watching on the television no mention of any kind of manipulation of the weather.
It comes down to global warming for them. That's their paradigm that they're working from, is that there's an extra degree or two, possibly three, within the oceanic heat of the Gulf, and that is fully responsible for it. That'll work. I mean, that's a great cover story. And then those that don't think will follow it, and that's enough information for them to. But it doesn't explain the sheer frequency of the storms and the statistical improbability of where they have made landfall time after time after time. It's just we're at the edge of believability that it's all natural.
And so the people on the television right now that are discussing the hurricane, they have their orders not to talk about weather modification, or do they have any?
I don't know. There are certain. I think those that are aware of what's going on are very high up there, and everybody else is just left fumbling in the dark. You know, and as long as they aren't curious on their own to go explore these things, they continue to just rest within their paradigm of understanding. And until there's reason to venture out of that, they're just not brave enough.
Now, you have been a weatherman for 20 years. You've expressed your concern by what you've observed. You've been seeing spraying in the skies, haven't you?
Oh, they're active out here today. I've probably seen 20 planes today just outside the house here.
Why do you think that's going on?
I believe there are two purposes for it. Number one, at least as regards to weather, and there are probably other agendas as well, but this is the one that is most relevant to my research. Number one is surveillance. They mark up the skies looking for where zones of the atmosphere have been heated, cooled, or getting nudged or shifted in directions. It's like we've got this giant grid or bricks within that grid, and all of these squares can be nudged and slid along. And so these contrail planes will fly through these grids, and at the intersection or edges of these grids, you'll find deformations within the contrails. They'll disappear. They'll slide and roll over and smear out. They'll end up with a helical twisting kind of shape if you're in a zone where the two grids are sliding on top of each other. And the thick ones are simply there to make these invisible EM waves visible. So we're making this grid visible to you and I. And the other is to possibly add adhesion so this grid can then grasp the atmosphere and do what it wants with it.
Scott Stevens is our guest today, listeners. If you have questions for Scott, 800... Listeners, welcome back to the broadcast. We have Scott Stevens with us. His website is weatherwars.info. That's weatherwars.info. Keep in mind, the Republic Trading Post is there for you to purchase products to help continuing this direction that we do on the network. Scott Stevens is with us. Questions for Scott Stevens are welcome. But before we do that, I believe your name was mentioned on the Bill O'Reilly Factor. Is that correct?
Yeah, but I didn't hear it. I didn't see it. I don't tend to watch that show, but apparently so, because I've certainly gotten email from it. Definitely gotten email from it.
Was there positive or negative from the email? Do you know?
I only had three negative comments, mm-hmm. and then everything else has been interesting. And then they write back and go, "Oh my God, you've really done your homework." And this whole concept is simply a shock to people because it is so. Such wholly new information, and it is very difficult to get your mind around and grasp that this is not only a possibility, but that it has been accomplished, and not so recently either. It's been going on a while, and so there's that little bit of a feeling of betrayal, of where the heck have I been, and why hasn't this information been out there prior to right now? So there's that little bit of shock that goes on, and then once people begin to assimilated into what they see happening in the world, then it's much easier to swallow, and they begin to see how things are intricately connected.
Well, I certainly am very, very happy that you've joined us today. It's very important that you came on. Let's move to Chuck in Oklahoma. A question for Scott, Chuck?
Yeah. One of the questions that I was going to ask, and how you doing, Chris? Long time no see.
Fine, thank you.
I've been getting some information about something called hot towers in the hurricane. I'm not familiar with that term.
Hot towers are just very intense thunderstorms. And as they climb high into the thunder, yeah, that's what they are. And they're largely responsible for driving these storms because it's those violent updrafts that evacuate the atmosphere, the air, and the lower layers of the hurricane, and then continue that inflowing and the circulation. So if you can get those hot towers taking the atmosphere up and then spilling out at the top of the hurricane, you keep the spin going. So they're incredibly important. And that's I was going to say, if you develop these hot towers and unbalance the hurricane so they're all located on one side, you'll change its center of gravity and you can begin to steer it off to one direction, like a wobbling top. So that's another reason why they're important.
And then I was going to ask, for a hurricane to strengthen, does it have to have a certain temperature in the water or more?
82 to 83 degrees is about the base floor for the development of a storm. They'll survive longer on somewhat cooler water, but 82 is just about that magic number. And I think the goal right now is between 86 and 88.
So really, this thing should stay strengthened or strong, and the only reason it wouldn't would be if it was played with.
If it were played with. And it's probably reached its peak intensity. What did we get to? 175, possibly 180, which is just monumental. But the waters are cooler towards the Gulf Coast. So left in its natural state, that's what we would expect to happen, is that there would be a gradual weakening trend. But the seas are still so stirred up because the low pressure in that eye was so deep that there is a volume of water. There is a dome of water that is collecting under Rita. And that dome of water, that storm surge plus the wind, is what is going to be the great damage, as we saw with the tsunami that Katrina brought inland. So go ahead.
One more. Does geographic stress have anything at all to do with a hurricane? And then I'll end my questions.
I really couldn't answer that. You mean as far as the crust or the? Can you elaborate?
Well, like an earthquake.
Like an earthquake.
Right.
You know, there was a quake that I believe followed Ivan in last year, and that may have been more the scalar bleed over into the tectonics under the planet, as this energy is then resonated into the hurricane. So that's probably a way to find weaknesses within the crust, is because so much energy is then being focused in and around the storm vicinity.
Now this wouldn't be carrying extra weight at the. It'd be actually lighter because it's lifted, or what?
There's still mass. There is still mass there. But there have been two additional, what they term, mass sinks, where as the atmosphere is evacuated out of Rita, she deepens and deepens, that mass has to go somewhere. One has been to the Lesser Antilles, and then the other was in the Bay of Campeche. So that mass has to be removed from the storm, and it doesn't just sit out there like the lip of a bowl. It was literally evacuated and moved a good distance away from the storm. Whether that is a fully natural phenomena or partially scalar-induced, I don't know.
Okay, guys, I'll let you go.
Thank you, Chuck. Thank you very much. Let's move to, we're about to hit a commercial pause, but let's bring up Bruce real quickly. Bruce, welcome. Hello, Bruce. Oh, here we go. Commercial pause for the free enterprise cause. We're happy to have Scott Stevens with us today. It was a battle getting you with us, Scott, so... Thank you for being here.
You betcha.
We'll be right back. Stay with us. Back with Scott Stevens. Listeners, weatherwars.info is a website. It's on our website, americanexpose.com. And certainly Scott has graciously let us know that he'll be able to be with us on Monday as well. And thank you for that, Scott.
Sure thing.
We have the board full. Let's take Vicki in Idaho. Vicki, welcome to the broadcast, Vicki.
Oh, Vicki. Hi, Chris and Scott.
Hi, Vicki.
Hi. I have a couple of questions for you. The first one is the jet stream. Can this technology be used to move the jet stream?
Easily. Again, if you've got the atmosphere sliced into cubes, you manage each piece at a smaller portion at a time. And if you add energy to one of these cubes, what happens when you heat a gas? It expands. And as it expands, it exerts pressure on the additional parcels of the atmosphere nearby. And if you progressively scan or heat sections of the jet stream or the atmosphere, then you begin to build a high-pressure zone. And you'll restrict the jet stream's movement off to the north or to the west, or however you align your heating algorithms. So it's the same thing works. If you want to heat one side, you can cool the other. And indeed, it's much easier to just remove the heat out of one zone and then add it to another, so you're not having to add additional energy into the system. So it's just a matter of shuffling it around to where you want to go. And it's the contrail planes to see the progress of the operation.
Okay, so that big high-pressure dome that's down in Texas that's holding the storm or involved with that storm Rita in some way, they could actually put the high-pressure dome there.
Exactly. They'll just peel away apart from East Texas and add it to off the Georgia coast, and the high just slowly looks like it's receding. And in fact, it's just being shot to pieces on the western side, and that opens the avenue for Rita to come on through. Same thing out west. We've got a deep low dropping into place. And as that deep low settles into the west, then that gets the south wind, that return flow coming off the Gulf of Mexico into the southern plain states. So what happens in the west and in the Pacific 5, 6, 7 days ahead of landfall is relevant. And so they have to know the state of the whole atmosphere because it's all interconnected.
Yeah, well, in Chemtrails group that I'm in, we noticed that on news reports. They really don't talk about the jet stream anymore, and it's really hard to find an image of the jet stream.
And if you are subject to watching stations that are run by consultants rather than their own weather departments or the news directors, it's just this gradual dumbing down of the process. As long as the presentation looks good and it's full of eye candy, that's good enough. It doesn't necessarily mean that you get to educate your audience and your viewers, and that's a shame. That's a shame because they're always hungry to learn.
Okay. All right, and the other thing I wanted to ask, and I'll listen to the answer off air, is I'm assuming that they can do the same thing with tornadoes.
Oh, sure.
Could you explain that process?
You just enhance the updraft. Take or evacuate the energy out of the top of these thunderstorms, and if it's cold, then the heat from below, that rising atmosphere, will keep rising taller and taller than it would normally past the limits of the troposphere. You take away the heat up top, and you increase the instability of the atmosphere, and then you end up with a storm that is more violent than it would be otherwise. You could do it electrically as well, and it create that short circuit between the ionosphere and then the ground, and then that current flows, and the storm just is ionized, and then it attracts more water from the surrounding environment than would be there naturally. It's easy to do, way easy to do. I've seen it happen yesterday here in eastern Idaho. It was a beautiful demonstration of thunderstorms, clouds moving in opposite directions, clouds passing through other clouds, things that just should not happen. But there's more than one nation that has a grasp on how to alter the weather. There are several. And they may not all have the same agendas, so we're left struggling back and forth over who wins in the end. And it honestly comes down to who's got the most antennas and the most experience. And that's above my pay grade.
Very scary stuff.
You know, okay. it doesn't Thanks, have God. To be scary. It's just how they're using it is scary.
Thank you for your call, Vicki. Let's move to Ian in Canada. Much questions from the listeners. I can see it right now. Ian, welcome.
Before I ask my question, I just wanted to remark, Scott, that there's an excellent picture of the pentagonal geometry of a hurricane eye in the Farmer's Almanac published out of Lewiston, Maine for 2005. It's on page 105 in the Canadian issue in an article by Glenn Morris, live from the weather frontline. They don't remark on the geometry, but you can see it there. The question I wanted to ask is if you're aware of the occult signatures that indicate a relationship between the Sumatran earthquake, 25th of December, 2004, and New Orleans, August 29th, 2005, namely the separation of 35 weeks where the moon was in the toe of Gemini on both early mornings of those events. And most importantly, secondly, that the Sumatran epicenter was located almost precisely at 0 degrees equator, 90 degrees east longitude, and New Orleans occurred precisely 30 degrees above the equator north and 90 degrees west longitude. And that way, New Orleans and the Sumatran epicenter formed an antipodal pole perpendicular to the north-south pole, with the circumference or equator of that polar axis, in fact, being the Greenwich Meridian at 0 degrees longitude and the international dateline at 180 degrees longitude.
It's how this material universe rests on the rest of creation, all of those other dimensions, allows certain energy hot zones to be manifest. And then if you're playing with this scalar technology, which derives some of its energy from the membrane that separates our two dimensions,
it boggles the mind. They not only square the circle, they cube the sphere.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, it truly is beautiful. And it's a shame that they use it for the detriment of mankind.
I've got something to boggle your mind right now. MSNBC just reported a 4.0 earthquake in California.
Hello.
Can you believe that?
And the games go on.
Ian, anything else?
No, thank you, Chris. Excellent show, and I'm glad you got Scott this week.
Yes.
Thank you, Scott.
You betcha. Take care.
Thank you, Ian, and certainly it is a blessing to have you. You're courageous for standing out in your profession, aren't you? I mean, okay, maybe you don't want to be billed that way, but for you to stand out in your profession...
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
You're taking a risk for your job.
Well, and I'm anxious to move on to other things. I really am.
Aren't we all?
I truly don't have time to do both. It just I haven't had time to do both for 6 months. But so it truly won't be long before I get to do this full time, and I will embrace that opportunity.
Well, I hope we can work together in the future much more, Scott. This is very important, and thank you for being with us on Monday. And right now, let's move to Rick in Alabama. Rick, welcome to the show, Rick.
Hello. Down here and around the Mobile area, we're getting a lot of rain and wind. I'm wanting to know if you could tell me what are these antennas that are mounted somewhere? Are these microwave beams?
They're scalar beams.
What is a scalar beam?
Which is a longitudinal EM wave, and it's very different than the Hertzian waves. They behave far more like sound waves than that of than regular radio waves or Hertzian waves. And the antennas, we've got our HARP array up in Alaska, again, which is at one of those geometrically significant locations. My understanding is that a healthy portion of the Soviet ones are spread out, but the big center is near Kiev, and it was attached to Chernobyl. And ours are probably built underground. You know,
is there any way for us to track them?
Probably. But triangulation would definitely be a challenge. And that,
how would you go about it? I mean, what do you think?
You'd build a scalar wave detector, and that's not terribly hard to do. I've had more than one person email those designs to me, but I am not an electrical engineer, so it's like, okay, I've got the information, but I can't use it.
Well, I'd like for anybody out there that's got any understanding of this and know-how to put one of these together so we can track and find out whether they're really doing this or not. My other question is, if they can do this, why do they not take these create hurricanes like in other parts of the world than where they normally come from?
Well, remember, it's all about economics. It's about rebuilding. It's about spending the money. The gross domestic product of this country is measured by the flow of dollars, whether it's rebuilding or spending on an iPod or re-roofing a roof that was stripped off. And that's what the whole economy is built on, is keeping that flow of dollars going. And if people are going to slow down their spending, then they need to replace our retraction in spending with that of the insurance companies rebuilding, just to keep the flow of money going. And it's almost as if, economically, we're headed off a cliff, and the pedal is still to the metal, and not realizing that we need to rein in spending and that we've got significant economic issues directly ahead. So there's the economic reasons of why they do this, and I've been questioned as to why did it happen to Japan.
I mean, like, why don't they create one a hurricane, say, up in the North Atlantic? And why don't we see that happen?
They did in the South Atlantic last March, and it was called Katrina. We had Hurricane Katrina, the first one ever seen in the South Atlantic Ocean. And indeed, well, there's no list for the South Atlantic simply because the wind shear is usually far, far too great to generate a tropical storm, let alone a strong Category 1 hurricane, as it made landfall in Brazil in March of 2004. And that was a ping in submariner's talk. That was a ping of the atmospheric sciences community of, do you see what's happened? Do you recognize the significance of what we've been able to accomplish with this technology? And because they're so stuck in their belief system of how this Earth works, it completely went over their head. And so we have a round of four hurricanes going into Florida because the absence of curiosity from the scientific community gave them, those that run this technology, a free hand. They wouldn't be questioned that these were artificial.
There you go.
Okay, thank you.
Rick, thank you for your call. Let's quickly move to Cliff in Arkansas. Cliff, hello.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, sir.
I'm first-time caller. hope you don't mind, but
thank
I would
you.
Like to ask your guest a question. About 4 or 5 years ago, there was a chemtrail in the sky, and it was just perfectly round. Hard to guess how far across it was, maybe a mile or 2 miles, but it was pretty good ways off from me. But it was just, and way up in the air, but it was perfectly perfectly round, just a perfect circle. Could you have any idea what that would, why they would do something like that? Or they just show it off and say, hey, you know, we're doing it and there's nothing you can do about it?
That's a large portion of why we have had the weird weather we have. It's simply show off. I have seen, Mickey Mouse drawn in the sky. And there is a functionality of art where they're painting in the sky and doing it because nobody's questioning it. I mean, you don't give these guys these kind of tools and not have them have their curiosity, you know, have them exploring what they can do. Christmas, last year, over Phoenix, same unusual things. I mean, circles, three circles, and it truly looked like Mickey Mouse. And then there were others across the Southwest the day before Christmas and the day after Christmas.
Okay, one other question. I don't know if this is in your realm of expertise or not, but I figure it could be. When I was a kid, back in all the mid-50s, I lived up in northern Arkansas, and in the north sky, it looked like the moon. But it was, you could tell it was way far off, and it was just a light that hung there for about 4 days. And finally, you know, I looked up and it was gone. But while it was there, I was in my room. It was kind of imagine a hallway going down and making a sharp right. I was in that room, and a ball of light by the size of a golf ball came through the window, made a 90 to the right, went down at the end of the hallway and made a 90 to the left. Where it went after that, I don't know. But
wow.
this was, it was definitely, you know, it wasn't zigzagging or wobbling. I mean, it knew where it was going.
Very fascinating. Very fascinating. I haven't seen that. I know there are what they call registration tools with this technology, and there are plasma balls. And these plasma balls are manifest. It's kind of like a rifle and a laser pointer. So you can then, where you see the laser point on the wall is where your bullet's going to go.
Right.
And this tool, this scalar weaponry, uses those kind of plasma balls for targeting, for the registration of the targeting of the weapon.
Well,
and
this,
so those were visible across Florida.
Well, now this big ball that was in the sky, it looked like the moon, only it's in the northern sky, just maybe.
Maybe you had visitors.
Well, no, I don't think so.
No.
I mean, I don't know. I don't. I never seen nobody. All I seen was that little light that came in the window. But that light that was off in the sky, that was big. It looked like the moon.
Wow.
You know, that's how far off it looked.
I wish I could have seen it. I really.
Well, I remember it. It stuck in my mind.
I bet it did.
But anyway, I'll let you go and let somebody else come on there. I just wanted to. Well, I got the answer, and I started thinking about that, and I wanted to ask. Appreciate
Thank you, Cliff. Thank you very much for your call. Let's move quickly to Walt in Michigan. Walt, welcome to the broadcast, Walt.
Hello, Chris.
Yes, sir.
Yes, hello, Mr. Stevens.
Hi.
Yeah, I want to ask you this. You know about the HARP transmitter in Alaska, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now I was told there are 10 to 12 of these transmitters in the North American continent. Do you know where the other transmitters are?
I don't. I know somebody in another radio show I had done. There's one up towards Michigan, and I know they wanted to put them in Greenland and over towards northern Scandinavia.
Well, they were talking about putting the ELF transmitter for communications in the Great Lakes area, and our state turned it down. They refused it wisely.
Michigan, right?
Yes, I'm in Michigan.
Yeah.
Where in Michigan is the transmitter at, do you know?
I don't. I would guess it's up north, though.
By the upper?
Probably upper. But,
upper Peninsula?
I don't know for sure.
Okay, another question. The heat from these scalar weapons or transmitters is what they're using, the heat, and exciting the rotation of these hurricanes by applying a high rate of heat. radiation to the hurricane to cause it to spin more violently?
Heat or cool. I mean, if you, what you would want heat at the bottom.
I'll tell you what,
bottom.
Stay with us now. We've got to continue on the other side of the commercial pause for a few moments more. Walt, stay with us, and we'll answer your question.
The broad...
They have the power, period. If it's a judgment from God, which the Bible says that he'll have his way in the whirlwind, then it'll come back again. They've just delayed the judgment. We pray for mercy. That's what we pray for. And if you want to see where it was predicted, look under KimClement.com and see that on July 22nd, he predicted that New Orleans thing. And
what is that website again?
Kim, K-I-M-C-L-E-M-E-N-T, Clement.com. And look, prophecy in the news, if he doesn't have it on the web page, which he had for months because he said August, September, and October are going to be significant months with a lot of people dying in August, but it would be a good thing.
And
God is very angry. I have been able to predict. I mean, after he told me the hurricane was coming, I could see the pattern. By the way, they voted for abortion. Now, the way coming to Texas, oh, yeah, they voted for abortion down there. In fact, only two people, Republicans in the whole state of Texas, to vote for abortion were right here from Fort Worth.
Well, Pat, I appreciate your call. Scott, your comments?
Just that underlying all of creation is something called pure potentiality. Science likes to call it the quantum vacuum, and it is fully responsive to thought and your intent. Whether that is delivered in prayer or otherwise, it will respond to thought. And then that is then manifest very slowly in the third dimension, but prayer has power. Don't ever forget that. Prayer has power. What you don't want to get involved in is someone else's destiny, and that is theirs. And so often we try to pray for people to be relieved of suffering when indeed it is that suffering who will make them the better person as they come through it. And that's going to be a struggle as we see more and more of these events happening, is to get sucked into that victim mentality that we've been victimized over and over and over, and that is the lowest vibration, that is the lowest emotion you could hold within yourself, is that feeling of powerlessness. Mm. And that's just not a place where you want to go, that hopelessness. And that is indeed how the evil doers will exert their power over us, is by making us feel as victims, as we are powerless, as we cannot let that into your heart.
Thank you so much for being with us, Scott. I'll look forward to Monday now.
All righty.
Okay. Wonderful. Scott Stevens, listeners. Oh, boy. Thank you for joining us. God bless you all.